I wonder how many people, because, I mean, this movie was released 41 years ago. Do you immediately have a memory of this movie?
Lieutenant Morant, Captain Hunt was a particular friend of yours.
Yes. I mean, I was engaged to his sister in England.
So his death was very disturbing to you?
Well, it was more the way he died. He was mutilated.
You were present at the action where Captain Hunt was killed?
No.
Well, then how do you know he wasn't killed in a fair fight?
Because I saw his body.
Sometime later, you can't possibly know how Captain Hunt met his death. So you cannot produce any evidence to connect Visser with it. So then, why did you order him to be shot? It is customary during a war to...
That was Bruce Beresford's film in 1980, starring Edward Woodward as Breaker Morant, an Australian who had come to fight in South Africa on the side of the English against the Boers, and who was driven to do something which was completely out of character, this is the way the movie told us, by the murder and mutilation of his dear friend, as he was explaining in that movie clip. I've spent the last few days reading with enormous pleasure Peter Fitzsimons' book about Breaker Morant, just published. And it is, and he's, I'm delighted to say, on the line to us now from Sydney, and it's wonderful to be able to say good evening Sydney time to Percy Fitzsimons. It is, Peter, an unapologetically polemic against not only Breaker Morant, but against the war, against Kitchener, about so much that was wrong with that period in South African history.
Well, thank you for having me on your show, Mr. Mathan. And I must say, I'm delighted to get the review of a South African reading it, because I went into it. Breaker Morant in this country has been an iconic name and really, for most Australians, something of a hero. You know, like it was always felt that the Pommies did him down and that he was put up, you know, as a great Australian man, put up against the wall by those cruel Pommy bastards. And I went into it not knowing what to expect. The starting point for me, I used to be on the council of the Australian War Memorial, and at one point we voted for a Boer War statue sculpture to honour what happened. I went to the opening and I was stunned to see the words of my grandfather, nothing to do with me, but my grandfather had fought with the Victorian Light Horse in that Boer War. I knew my grandfather, and there were the words of my grandfather on the wall, on the sculpture, talking about writing to my great grandmother how shocking the war was. And so I go into it sort of as a family duty to understand the Boer War, to get to the bottom of Breaker Morant. And what I found was quite shocking to me. I'm sure for you as a South African, you're more than familiar with the horror of the concentration camps, of the houses, the 30,000 Boer homesteads being burnt down by Kitchener's basic scorched earth march through the northern part of South Africa. I had no idea of any of that, and I was quite shocked by it. And, you know, there was a letter from my grandfather that talked to my great-grandmother saying, "It's been a tough day, Mum. We had to burn down some homesteads. The Boer women were crying, but look, this is a tough job and it's got to be done." And then when I go into what Breaker Morant did, this man was not a hero. This man was an absolute war criminal. This man was responsible for the deaths of children. You know, gave the orders for Boer children to be gunned down. And the glory in the story, there's not a lot of glory, but the glory belongs to the decent Australian men who, and one New Zealander, and Morant was born an Englishman and came to Australia when he was about 19 or 20 years old. But there were 15 men who were in his company who wrote to the colonel and said, this man is ordering us to shoot civilians. We did not sign up for this. And it was the basis of that the court-martial was initiated. But I was quite shocked by what I found. Yeah. And I used four researchers. I went into it deeply.
That clip we were playing from Bruce Beresford's 1980 film, Woodward's, not Woodward, Breaker Morant's defense, why he'd given the orders for the firing squad to shoot dead the Boer prisoners, because he was in, these days we would call it post-traumatic stress, because of the Boer supposed torture, murder and mutilation of his good friend Percy Hunt. But as you write, the Boers didn't do that. He was killed attacking a house which was heavily defended, and his body was untouched apart from the bullet wound which killed him when it went through his heart.
Morant was an inveterate liar, and he was a poet as well. Like, he was this rouse about, the most famous poem in Australia was called The Man from Snowy River, and it was written by a great poet by the name of Banjo Patterson. And the man from Snowy River let the pony have his head. He swung his stock grip round and gave a cheer, and he raced it down, so on. And Morant was a poet like that. He knew Banjo Patterson, and even Banjo Patterson acknowledged this man was an inveterate liar. And when he got to South Africa, yes, he was a good horseman. Yes, he was a fine shot. Yes, he was charismatic. Yes, he could recite poetry by the fire and drink them all under the table and all that. But then when the atrocity started, and he was placed in the dock, he came up with all these lies. The first of the lies was that Kitchener had given orders that the Boers, all Boer prisoners who were surrendering, were to be shot. And I do not admire Kitchener at all. So in other history books I've done, I don't like Kitchener one bit, and I don't like his imperialism for a start. I don't like the fact that he started up the concentration camps. But there is no evidence, absolutely no evidence, that he gave orders for the Boers to be shot. Why would he do that when he'd started the concentration camps? And the same unit that Breaker Morant was a part of had, in the weeks prior to these atrocities, actually taken in 100 Boers and taken them to the concentration camps. It defies belief that there was any such orders. On the subject of Captain Percy Hunt, in every book that's ever been done on Breaker Morant, and in the film that you cite at the beginning, it was always, he was so close with Percy Hunt and we were going to marry sisters. Now, fortunately, because my researchers and I can work in the age of the internet, where we can access archives in South Africa and Zimbabwe and England and Australia at the click of a finger, well, it did take a lot of time, but we were able to prove that that was all lies. He and Percy Hunt had not known each other for more than a few weeks. They'd never been to England together. It was just one more of Morant's many, many lies. Also established, so he said, yes, I lost my head because I saw Percy Hunt and I saw the mutilation. No, he did not see that. He wasn't there when Percy Hunt launched this absolutely suicidal attack on the Viljoen homestead. The Viljoens were commandos, and it was a suicidal attack. He was killed fair and square. Morant never saw the body, so came up with the idea that he was mutilated, lost his head, etc., etc. But all of that was lies.
I mean, I didn't know much about Breaker Morant. I sort of accepted that Bruce Beresford's film contained some truth and some dramatic exaggeration, because that's what films do. And then reading your book, and I sort of vaguely remember the character of Alfred Taylor, who persuaded the court martial that he was innocent, and you say no, he wasn't. He was the most guilty, the one most responsible for the many atrocities that occurred. But I wondered, you know, particularly with your having started, Peter, by saying that Breaker Morant is this kind of folk hero in Australia. Has your book been around long enough for people to scratch their heads and say, wow, we have to rethink?
I got a wonderful response to it by most people who read it, because, you know, I'm standing on the shoulders of the four researchers I've worked with. It was an expensive operation to put it all together. But one of the things I try to do is, I'm sure you'll appreciate, I try to write the book like a novel. I rest it on 2,000 footnotes, most of them pointing to original documentation. What I write's not up for discussion about whether or not it happened. It did happen. Here's the documentation. Here are the transcripts. Here are the court. Here's here's the transcript of the court cases. This is what happened. And yet in Australia, there has been a movement to this day, saying pardon, you know, there should be a posthumous pardon for Breaker Morant. And those people have attacked me. I don't care. The idea that the Australian, I'm one of my other roles, I'm chair of the Australian Republic Movement. Call me crazy, but I think Australia can do better in the 21st century than find our head of state from a family of English aristocrats living in a palace in London. And to this day, the idea that the Australian Parliament should petition British Parliament to pardon, to offer a posthumous pardon to an English man who was dobbed in, who was called on by 50 Australian men who risked their lives to have him court-martialed, is absolutely absurd.
It is a very, very powerful read, and I hope that South Africans with any kind of interest in that period in our history will turn to the book, and I'm sure they will learn many things that they did not know or see things in an entirely new light. It's you and your researchers deserve an enormous amount of credit. Thank you very much for talking to us, Percy Fitzsimons, author of Breaker Morant, the epic story of the Boer War and Harry Breaker Morant, drover, horseman, bush poet, murderer or hero. Very much murderer, not hero, in the version of Peter Fitzsimons.